interim government in Egypt is moving closer towards a transition, but divisions are still plenty, from the definition of a coup d'etat to the way that leads to democracy and independence. As a special U.S. envoy pays Egypt a visit, more members of the former ruling Muslim Brotherhood Party are detained, and the military threatens to use force against protesters who try to approach its bases. It's not easy to predict what will happen next in Egypt. I'm Homa Lezgi, and you're watching The Debate.
Almost 2 weeks have passed since Egypt's first freely elected president, Mohamed Morsi, was overthrown by the military. He was in power for only a year. What followed the overthrow of Morsi was days full of tensions and even deadly protests. The North African country is divided into two. The landmark Tahrir or Liberation Square in the capital Cairo, occupied by Morsi's opponents, while miles away in the city's Nasr city district, supporters of the ousted president hold ground. These people who've camped out here say they won't go anywhere unless Morsi returns to power.
I am calling for Morsi's return to his post. We demand he be reinstated.
The Muslim Brotherhood, on whose ticket Morsi was propelled to power, has staged yet another million-man march to pile further pressure on the army-backed interim government. Some believe Morsi was overthrown because he didn't give in to the Western pressure.
What has happened now is collapse of this state and the return of the totalitarian regime, which does not allow Islam to have any wars. Sisi is just a pawn in a chess game and is carrying out whatever the Zionists and Americans tell him to do. He is just one of their tools who is carrying out the goal of doing away with democracy in Egypt.
But the military isn't budging. The head of the armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, is on the defensive. He says Morsi violated his popular mandate and also earned the anger of state institutions. His comments come as more people join the interim government's lineup, with Mohamed el-Baradei being the latest. He's being sworn in as a vice president. But the Muslim Brotherhood is staying away from this cabinet. While Morsi's staunch supporters are on the streets, the ousted president and several other Brotherhood leaders are under criminal investigation, with authorities pressing several charges, including espionage and murder, against them. Meanwhile, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State William Burns is in the divided capital, meeting the interim and military leaders. The U.S. gives $1.5 billion to Egypt's army every year. Washington has been criticized by both sides for what each camp sees as support for their rival's position. With both supporters and opponents of Morsi digging their heels, the coming weeks and even month will show whether bitterly divided rivals can come up with a compromise to salvage the revolution.
Well, you're watching The Debate, and on this edition, we're going to speak to two political analysts joining us from Cairo, Mr. Mohammad Sharaf and Mr. Mustafa Reza. We do have Mr. Mustafa Reza with us. We'll try to get Mr. Sharaf as soon as we can also in the show. So I'll start my first question addressed to Mr. Reza in Cairo. Now, Mr. Reza, the interim government is taking shape, but does this mean an end to the crisis?
I think this. You see, this is a very good step that we have been having a new government now with new professional ministers, because you see, the ministers which were in Mr. Andil's cabinet, the cabinet which was before Dr. Bibliawe, were not so professional. They were chosen according to the criteria that they belong to the Muslim Brotherhood, to the Islamic groups, regardless of their efficiency. So this certainly caused a lot of failures on the political, economic and social side, and nothing was agreed to upon. But this new cabinet will give a hope, because most of these ministers are professionals and they have experience in handling the vast problems that Egypt are facing just now.
So the question is, however, since the interim government does not include, Mr. Azhar, any Islamic party members, though, some are saying it's not going to be able to function properly because it's not inclusive. Do you agree with that?
Well, actually, the president and the prime minister invited the Muslim Brotherhood to participate in this cabinet and to participate and try to come and try to build the country. And now we have to forget about all our beliefs and our concepts. We have a very big problem because the country is in severe economic and political trouble. We have all to work together as a team in order to save the country. So it's not the time to say that who's going to get this and who's going to get that. You see, the point is that we have a big problem and we are all responsible for solving it. Because now, either we're from the Muslim, but if we don't, we are going to continue like that with a lot of protests and a lot of disagreements. We will go nowhere. We will have no investments. We'll have no tourism. We'll have instability. And even this new government will not be able to work in such an environment. If you have protesters here in Rabaa Adawiyya and protesters in Tahrir everywhere and in various provinces asking for this and that, and not having a common objective to reach, that will cause a real problem.
Well, right now we know that the interim Prime Minister, Mr. Hazem al-Biblawi, is locked in talks on a cabinet lineup, and he says that his cabinet will be dominated by technocrats. We know, for instance, the Al-Nur Islamic Party had said it will not join the interim government but would participate only in a, quote, elected government. With these kinds of debates put forward there, do you think talks on the new cabinet are going to fail, or at least are going to take a long time? Or do you think that by next week we are actually going to see a cabinet lineup introduced?
No, I don't think there'll be what you mentioned just now, because you see, as I mentioned before, the cabinet is consisting of a lot of professionals and experts which have international and local experience. So you see, but the point is not, we have to take into consideration that it's not 20 or 30 ministers that are going to run the country. If not everyone in Egypt, every Egyptian citizen is going to do his homework and going to go to work and stop protests and stop asking, cutting roads and all that and causing troubles, we will go nowhere. So the point is, it's not with changing the cabinet itself. I agree that the cabinet before that, the ministers, as I just mentioned now, were not so competent. But the point, if you get someone which is very professional and you have the outgoing, the external circumstances are not helping him. I'll give you an example. If you don't maintain the security, you will not have tourism or investments. So even the Minister of Tourism and the Minister of Investment will not be able to work if you don't restore the rule of the law and you don't restore the security of the country. So the point is that is the process is an interrelated process. It's not a matter of a cabinet or changing of people or that. It's the responsibility now is the whole country, all Egyptians are responsible for removing the country from the problems that we're having just now. And well, I see that the Muslim groups, you see, are very inflexible. You see, I see this attitude, it's not professional, you know. They have to participate because we all have a problem. And if the ship is going to sink, it's going to sink with all of us, with Muslims and non-Muslims.
Well, that's going to be an interesting point that we can put to our other guest, Mr. Sharaf, who are expecting to join us just as soon as we can. We'll try to bring him into the debate as well. But before he can join us, I'll put this next question to you, Mr. Azhar, and that is the visit by William Burns to Egypt. What do you think that visit was about? And do you think the U.S. is taking sides?
Well, we should remember that Egypt has strategic relations with the United States since 1974, when President Sadat had the first disengagement with Dr. Henry Kissinger after the October War, and things proceeded until we reached the Camp David agreements, and then Mr. Mubarak also was a strong ally of the U.S. So, on the other side, Egypt is a strategic partner and is an important country for the U.S. as a whole, because if Egypt is stable, the Middle East is stable. So the stability of Egypt is crucial and very important for the United States.
Yes.
The visit of the Under Secretary of State, Mr. Burns, is an exploratory visit here to see what will be the government strategy in relation to the Camp David agreements about the security in Sinai. Don't forget that we have borders with Israel in Sinai. And
yes, I'll stop you there if I may. I'm really sorry. I'm jumping in because I guess Mr. Mohammed Sharaf is with us right now, live from Cairo. Let's get him into the discussion and we'll continue. Now, Mr. Sharaf, some people have been saying that the Muslim Brotherhood deputy leader, Khairat al-Shater, and others who've led the Muslim Brotherhood have an interest now in turning the situation into something radical and confrontational. That, in fact, they say the majority of those in the new regime, like El Baradei and Beblawi, they want the Brotherhood to be a part of the new political process. But the Muslim Brotherhood does not want that, and this is not going to help. What do you say to that?
Would you please repeat the last part? I couldn't hear it well.
Yes, of course. A lot of people are saying that members of the interim government right now want the Islamic parties, the Muslim Brotherhood, to be in the political transition process and to move things forward. But the Muslim Brotherhood, by remaining defiant, is only complicating the situation.
Yes. Whatever government and whatever will happen is illegitimate, you know, it's coming as a result of a coup. It's against the will of the people. We didn't authorize them. We had a democratic path from which they deviated, and they are coming on the tanks, you know, on the muzzle of a tank. So those people behind, you know, whatever they said as a roadmap, it's a map without a road, really, you know. So we see it, you know, as infringing on our rights. We are for democracy, and the only gain which we had from the revolution of 2011 was to have our democratic path and to have a respect for our vote. This time, our votes have been stampeded on by this military coup. It's purely a military coup. It's uncalled for. Yes. Because if the process was the performance of the government of the or the performance of President Morsi, we had the parliamentary elections coming soon. And according to our new constitution, if you win the parliament, then you have the legislative power, and also you form the cabinet. The cabinet has 70% of the powers, about 70% of the powers. So you can force your way, you can force your will, you can start whatever you think, and even you can modify the constitution or amend the constitution in whatever way you think.
Well, Mr. Sharaf, the thing is, the Muslim Brotherhood right now has been saying, if I could just ask you this question, the Muslim Brotherhood has been saying, we have a just cause and we are prepared to sacrifice for that cause. But does this mean that there's going to be no compromise under any conditions with the Muslim Brotherhood and the interim government? I mean, isn't that going to lead to further violence and bloodshed?
You know, I'm not really an Islamist, but I see the Islamists are the people now abiding and adhering to the democratic process. They have been demonstrating now or sitting in Rabaa al-Adawiyya for 18 days. They didn't resort to any violence. The violence came from the government or the government forces. The coup, you know, killed the people at prayer, when they were at dawn prayer, when they were calling their God. So yes, they were really peaceful. They were attacked badly, you know. We have about 100 martyrs and we have thousands of bad injuries. So I don't really call the Muslim Brothers calling for any sort of violence, but I am with them, you know, for staging a peaceful sit-in and a peaceful demonstration, you know, to return to normalcy.
Okay.
Because what really happens, you know, there is nothing worse than infringing on our will by a military coup. It's taking our vote by force. So those who are taking our vote by force, they have to resort to violence. And that's what we saw just a week ago in the massacre for people at prayer.
Okay, now before we move on with the debate, I'm just going to give our viewers a chance to take a look now at a comment that's been posted on our Facebook page. We'll take a look at comment number one and we'll be back.
Economically controlled, ideologically divided, Egypt is a primary goal of the imperialists to accomplish their agenda regarding the Middle East. They are successful in their agenda till now. Destabilizing Egypt is very much essential for imperialism, and as a result of present situation, Egypt will be under the control of the IMF and imperialism client states like Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and Qatar. No compromise is possible due to above mentioned scenario.
A comment there, concern basically voiced by a lot of people right now concerning the situation in Egypt. I'll go right to Mr. Reza in Cairo. Now, Mr. Reza, we're there seeing our guests saying that this is a coup d'etat, and when a president who is democratically elected is forced out of power by the military, then this means that people do have a right to protest this and come into the streets peacefully. So what is the way out here? I mean, how can this situation be resolved?
Well, actually, I'd like to comment on your guest, which is with us on the phone right now on the program, in defining what happened is a coup d'etat. This is not a coup d'etat at all. If the gentleman is aware of the law, a coup d'etat is made by a group of people, and they in themselves, they hold the positions, you see. In this case, we had an uprising. It was 33 million Egyptians, which were dissatisfied with the performance of the government and the lies that the Muslim Brotherhood were, and expectations and false expectations they gave to the Egyptians. About 200 million projects, billion-dollar projects, which didn't come, and all these promises that the 100-day project that is going to solve the transportation. And I'm really astonished that Dr. Morsi is an engineer, and he mentioned a lot of incomplete or incorrect information. How could he solve a problem for the transportation? It needs infrastructure, it needs a lot of money, it needs an action plan in 100 days. This was an unrealistic objective. All these factors caused that the people were distrusting the system, and we've been suffering more than we've been suffering during the Mubarak era. The prices increased, we had strikes every day, the employment rate has increased, the reserves have been depleted. We were begging from Qatar and from Turkey and from Saudi Arabia in order to live. Nothing was done, no vision, no action plan. Even the last speech, instead of Mr. Morsi trying to give us one solution to one problem, he started attacking the old regime and started mentioning things about the old regime instead of looking to the future. All this certainly calls a reversed action, and this is not a coup d'etat, this is people who didn't agree about what was going on, like the Mubarak turnaround, you see, which happened.
Mr. Reza, if I stop you there, if I may.
And the military took over for a certain period and then delivered it to Morsi.
Yeah, just to give you both enough time, we are short of time here. Just like to give a chance to Mr. Sharaf to respond to that. Now, Mr. Sharaf, we know that the United States has so far refused to call the situation in Egypt a coup d'etat. And William Burns, he was speaking in Cairo today, he said that this is a second chance for the Egyptians. What do you think, first of all, his visit to Egypt is about? I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood is saying that he is siding with the military, but those on the other side are actually saying that the United States is trying to vie for the Muslim Brotherhood.
Hello, are you talking to me, please?
Yes, Mr. Sharaf, do you want me to repeat the question?
No, could you repeat it quickly, please?
Yes, yes. The position of the United States here, William Burns said this is a second chance for Egyptians. What do you think about the United States' role in the situation? Is it taking sides?
The United States had been a key player from the very first moment, and not just right now, right before, after the revolution, they had been intervening to shape the fluid state in Egypt. And their main cause is to guarantee the security of Israel and to guarantee their interests and to make sure that Egypt is subservient to their causes in the Middle East and remain subservient to them, just to serve Israel. But what really happened, the American ambassador in Cairo, she had been a key player since November. I mean, we had been seeing her inciting for the opposition to stage demonstrations and asking them, if you reach certain numbers, we will be on your side. And she had been really staging all that. She had been part with the military. In the last moment, when the military was forcing the president to be for their takeover, she was there also asking the president to sign for his abrogation. So well, Mr. Chaff,
I'll just jump in here if I may. We are very short in time. Just concluding remarks by both of you. Mr. Sharaf, quickly if you can. If none of the two sides are going to enter into a compromise, this will leave Egypt in a divided state. And who's going to benefit from this?
What compromise? If you take my vote, you know I'm not going to compromise. We have to return to normalcy. When they did their coup, they said the people were out in the streets and they had a head count. We ask them to have the head count now and reverse their coup, because what we will be after is our democratic process will preserve it and preserve
our votes.
Mr. Chair,
I'll stop you there if I may. We are out of time. Quickly, Mr. Reza, your response to that as well. What should be done to come out of this impasse?
Mr. Reza, you mean?
No, Mr. Reza.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, what should be done now? What's the solution?
Yes.
Mr. Reza, what is the solution?
Well, the solution
now
is that the Muslim Brotherhood have to be more flexible, because, yes, I'm telling you now, the solution is that all parties, see, Muslim Brotherhood and other parties have to agree about a certain objective to save the country. Because the country, as I told you, is in severe trouble in all aspects. We have to forget our beliefs, we have to forget our parties, we have to look to the future of this country, because the country is in severe trouble and everyone has to get concessions. The president, in charge now, has asked all parties to come in order to try and stay together and see solutions for what we're facing here. But unfortunately, the Muslim Brotherhood are not taking the matter. They want to enforce what they have in mind, regardless of any other other aspect. And this certainly won't work. You cannot have, the Muslim Brothers are not alone in this country. There are other people. There are a majority which don't want them. And we had a lot of problems.
Right.
And we need to go out of this. So the point is that we have
all of us, Mr. Reza, we are out of time.
Strategy and an action
a big
plan
thank you there
and
to
put
Mr.
certain objectives that we want to reach.
Mr. Mustafa Reza with us there, as well as Mr. Mohammed Sharaf, two political analysts with us live from Cairo. Thank you very much for being on another edition of The Debate. We've run out of time. From me, Homa Lezgi, until our next program, it's goodbye.